Join the conversation
on the Cape Talk app, online and across the Cape on 567 AM.
You're with Cape Talk.
It's 33 minutes past one, and I'd like to spend the remainder of this half hour telling you about a conference that is coming up in Stellenbosch next month with a bit of a difference. It's a seminar that's going to bring together health professionals working in the field of neurodiversity. What's different about it, though, is that it's going to be presented exclusively by people who are themselves autistic. And my guest in studio is one of the conveners of this. I think it is a world first event. She's an autism advocate and one of the directors of the Autistic Strategy Network. Her name is Tanya Melnichuk, and it's a great pleasure to welcome her back to the Cape Talk studios. Lovely to have you with us again, Tanya.
Thank you. Yay. And I'm glad I get to be here over lunchtime.
Great. I want to start just up front by revisiting an issue we discussed last time that you were with us, so that we can get it out the way and then focus on the conference itself rather than being diverted into an argument about labels. Because I know as I speak already, somebody is busy typing me an angry SMS, shouting at me for referring to somebody as autistic, saying you're supposed to say on the spectrum. I'm using the term deliberately, Tanya, because you've asked me to, and I know you've got very strong feelings on being allowed to identify yourself as you choose.
Yes, it's also something that in English language surveys across the world, and they get done often, what term do you prefer?
Yeah.
Most autistic people say they want to be called autistic. Some people say they prefer to be called people with autism, and a few of them say, I don't care as long as you treat me fine.
Yeah.
You know, so there's also reasons why I prefer that label. I don't say that I'm a woman with whiteness and a woman with Afrikaansness, and in fact, a person with womanness. I mean, that would be kind of weird. So it is one of the things that defines me. I mean, my gender does, to me, define something about who I am. So does my cultural identity. And so being autistic is also one of the things that certainly determines the way that I think and respond to the world to a far greater degree than any of the other two, either my gender or my enculturation. So for me, autistic is my preferred term.
Okay, thanks for explaining that. And I hope everyone listening understands that and takes that into account as they listen. This isn't a sort of an airy-fairy philosophical debate we're having here about including autistic people in conversations about autistic people. It's actually something that's enshrined in the United Nations Convention on the Rights of People with Disabilities, Tanya. You have the right to be included in conversations that directly impact on your future.
Yeah, one of the things that's actually quite weird is in some other areas, people can see quite clearly that that's important, but not always in the field of disabilities and especially in autism. And I'll give you an example. In around 2011 or 2012, there was a conference in Saudi Arabia on the rights of women. And there's a photo of the whole auditorium full of these people who attended the conference, and something about it is very, very weird. They're all men, and all the speakers are men, not a single woman in the audience and amongst the speakers. A women's rights conference. So you'd, as a Western person, you go like, geez, no, that can't be. I mean, like, let me look up Snopes, you know, did this thing really happen? Yes, it really did happen. And yet we can say that, you know, surely if it's a women's conference, then women should be leading the organization. Even if there are men involved, they'll be under the direction of women and saying, you know, this is what we'd like to have there. This is not happening in conferences on autism. It's autistic, non-autistic people organizing the conferences usually, them deciding what their gender should be. The same thing goes for research. The same thing goes for therapies. The same thing goes for everything else. And then maybe they will care to have what we call a self-narrating zoo exhibit, you know, somebody who kind of like has to walk on there and tell the story and so that all the therapists can think that they're cool. At best. And that is slowly changing, but it's still in the area of tokenism and, oh, that's very interesting, but we're still going to move on and just do things our way.
Yeah. Nothing about us without us is the phrase that's used internationally.
Yes, in many disability circles. It actually came from other marginalized communities, but it's come across there.
Okay. Now, I mentioned that UN Convention on the Rights of People with Disabilities, which speaks to this particularly. And I know a number of countries are signatory to the ideals of those conventions. So why do you think this is the first time that we're seeing an event about autism being run by people with autism?
Okay. There are a couple of reasons for that, I think. One of them is we're autistic, and that comes with certain things that we're not good at. Most of us are bad at organizing. It's called executive dysfunction. We're broke as well. Many of us are unemployed. We're on SASSA, things like that. Some of us can't speak, so we you know, like to say that I'd like to say what works for me is not something that they can often initiate. Mm. But there are other reasons as well. We often also fall into what is dictated to us about us. Anxiety is a huge factor as well. As soon as you have to deal with people on the outside, many autistic people are exceedingly anxious. And so getting something off the ground can be quite a huge thing. Just on one of your previous points as well, it's not just about the human rights aspect of it, we have a right to a say and so on. There are many professionals in dealing with autistic people who have their hands in their hair, of no Afrikaanse term gebruik daar, hande in jare. About, like, I don't know what to do with this patient, or I don't know what to do with this client. I really don't know how to solve this problem. And we actually, this seminar is specifically for them. It's not so much about us, you know, and having our voice heard. It's to help them to help their clients and patients, because we see so many of those patients and clients like falling by the wayside or struggling with things where we can see, well, you know, we know people who've gone through this before. We've read the medical journals and so on. Doctors and therapists and so on don't have the time to pour through journals like Cell and Molecular Autism and Neurobiology journals and so on. We look through those things constantly in order to try to help ourselves. Mm. And we've started to identify a lot of patterns which we can share, because we can match it up with our own lives. We can match it up with experiences. The presenters have seen several years of health problems come through and then channeled them to various professionals, and also sent along to professionals sometimes, please read this thing. And sometimes it takes time to convince somebody, no, Denkum, please just look at this as a possibility before a client or a patient can actually get help.
Okay. For those who might have joined the conversation late to the start of the interview, my guest is Tanya Melnichuk, who is one of the conveners of the forthcoming autism conference. And we'll leave the details with you at the end of the interview. It's happening in September next month. But let's get into the nitty gritty of what you're aiming to do and what the conference is going to cover. Tanya, it's partly targeted at the healthcare fraternity, but also wider than that. You're welcoming families living with autism or autistic people themselves who are interested in the topics you're talking about.
Yeah, so we've had sign-ups so far from doctors. We've got one psychiatrist. We've got some psychologists. We've got speech and language therapists. If you want to come, or you have some interest in autism, whether you're a researcher, whether you're a parent, there's some parents who've signed up, several parents, some of them specifically also because we're going to have a neuroscientist there who is an expert on ion channel diseases, which are quite rife amongst autistic people and their families. And they'd like to actually specifically be able to be there to hear him, to see him. So it is a variety. Anybody can come. It's not closed to anybody, but we are going to be talking about health. If we were going to be having a seminar for the interests of autistic people and for autistic people specifically, we would have had a different topic set. We would have actually had a lot more on things which we find entertaining, and so we wouldn't have focused only on health.
On health issues,
but because the healthcare people are the gatekeepers very often, especially if you're very disabled, to where you go and what happens to you. They prescribe what should happen. It's very important for them to hear what we say works for us, because what a lot of professionals say works doesn't actually work as well as some of the things which come from autistic people themselves, especially in the area of communication, but also in terms of dealing with sensory issues. Why we behave the way we behave? Why do we hit ourselves? Why do we bash our head against the wall? Why is the aggression sometimes so extreme when we're upset? And like, where does this come from? And how do we manage it in ways that work for us? What can be done there? It's things like that.
I know you described to me in our conversations prior to this interview that you've really battled in some cases to get the medical fraternity to listen to you, saying, we have got valuable input to these conversations. Please listen to us. And you said to me, you've kind of all but given up on trying. You've decided rather let's host a seminar for the people who do care to listen and not waste our energy on those who don't. How big is the one group versus the other?
In terms of numbers, I don't know, but I can tell you how it manifests itself. If I want to get research done about some aspect of some issue that affects autistic people, there's no organized, there are, in Cape Town, there are organizations, institutes and so on that specialize in autism research. There's no channel for me to go to them. I get doors shut, or I get politely fobbed off and so on. If I say, please study this, you're in molecular and cell biology and so on, we've got something in molecular and cell biology we want you to study. No, we can't study that because we're in molecular and cell biology. Sorry, I don't get that. And it's like, oh, no, you're interested in research. That's very nice. Have you ever heard about Temple Grandin? She's a famous autistic person. She also likes research. Bye-bye. We're doing children. You grown up. Go. You know? Yeah. So we decided we're not going to try there. We'll try with who wants to hear what we have to say. We can help you. We can help your clients. We can help your juvenile clients. We can help your grown-up clients and so on with some of the things that we've learned and what we've experienced. Just because I'm speaking doesn't mean that I don't have some things in common with some people who don't speak. My sensory issues sometimes overlap with people who don't. Some of us experience things like synesthesia, where your senses mix up, you know, like you can taste that sound, you know, that kind of stuff. Yeah. And that we have in common. But also one of my own particular areas, very strong areas of advocacy, is for the right of non-speaking people to have their voices heard, as it were. And that's why it was important for us to bring some non-speaking people in on this seminar to ask them what they need. So they're not there just to exhibit the fact that they can communicate by alternative means. We want to know their answers to our questions. Mm. What should healthcare professionals know about you that they don't know already? What is there that you want to say to them?
How are you actually physically going to include everybody in the conference? You're having to structure this conference in a slightly different way from your run-of-the-mill business gathering.
Yeah, there are a couple of reasons for that. Part of it is to do with accommodating disabilities, but also part of it accommodates what works for learning. We're not there to, and that's why I didn't call it a conference. It's not just there for a whole list of speakers. Each one has 20 minutes and then they pass on. And at the end, everybody says, wow, that was interesting. I'm so enlightened. And then they go back to their world. We're actually there to learn together. Now, we don't come as autistic people knowing everything. We know that. We're there to learn collaboratively with professionals as well. So they add some value too. And we're there to have a lot of discussion so that by the end we can say, where do we take this from here so that we can work together more effectively? That's one of the things. That means that there's a lot more workshopping that goes on as well. There's also a lot of flexibility, which for autistic people can be a huge problem because they want to know exactly what's going to happen. So my autistic participants and everything are very much briefed around that flexibility and when it'll flex, and don't worry, you know, I understand your anxiety around that.
Yeah.
And we have even things like the workbooks themselves are dyslexia friendly. There's going to be an extra quiet area where people can withdraw. We'll call it the cave, so on, because many autistics have sensory issues.
Yeah.
We won't have clapping. That noise bothers autistic people. What we will do, and this we draw from other autistic-led seminars, how they do it in the rest of the world, is you are allowed to flap. It's called flaplause as opposed to applause. The difference with ours, I think, why it's a world first is because it's for health professionals. It's not that there haven't been other autistic-led events in the world before.
Let's talk in detail about some of the topics you're going to be focusing on some of your speakers. You mentioned your international speaker from Switzerland, Dr. Urs Thomert, who is an autistic neuroscientist who works in the field of genetics and ion channel diseases. I think for many of our listeners, actually, they won't even know what ion channel diseases are. Tanya, can you explain
in
layman's terms?
All of the cells in your body have little holes in the walls, and they're actually not empty holes. They've got protein in there, and that little bit of protein is there to transport ions, which are electrolytes, you know, potassium, magnesium, those kind of things, in and out of your cells. And that protein is sometimes, and there are all sorts of different proteins. One protein kind of thing is needed for your letting the calcium in, and a different one is needed for letting the chloride in, and so on and in and out. And those proteins are sometimes defective. They become sick in us, partially because we're genetically vulnerable to illnesses and also partly because of the environment and what we eat and things like that. And it's not that all health issues that autistic people struggle with are related to those things, but there are many. So many of our sensory problems come from there. There are also movement disorders that come from there. And Dr. Thomert himself has a very rare disease of his own ion channels, which is a degenerative one. And what he's going to be speaking on is on the role of axonal transport. Axons are those long strings in your nervous system, and degenerative issues which happen there. So how they can break down over time as you get ill. These issues are not only in autistic people, they're also in their relatives. So many of the things that we talk about at the seminar are not only going to apply to autistic people, but also because autism is an umbrella term for a cluster of neurodevelopmental phenomena, some of which are useful, some of which are not always useful, and some which occur outside autistic people and in their close relatives.
Interesting. Somebody's asking about Asperger's and how it relates to autism. I don't know if you feel comfortable responding to that.
That's fine.
Yeah.
It's okay. It's an It's an old-fashioned term, really, for autistic people who started speaking at the usual time that other people start speaking, and that's about the only thing that makes it different from other, you know, whatever manifestations of autism. I had that diagnosis when it still existed. It's actually becoming a bit impolite because people discovered that the guy who's named after Dr. Hans Asperger, that he was a Nazi who killed people if they were too disabled. And he was the one who sifted and sorted them and said, you can live because you're clever and you can't because you're too disabled. And so we'll take you away from your parents and kill you. So you don't want to be called Asperger anything anymore. Yeah. Like, oh my goodness, it's like we called a child of Hitler. At least that's what it feels like for some of us now.
Okay.
Just back to the health topics. Some of the things, I'd like to give you a glimpse into the kinds of things which people find puzzling, which we're going to solve, or not solve, but which we're going to talk about. There was a kid, for example, who his speech and language therapist said, I don't know what's going on with the kid. The school that he's at, which is a special needs school, they wanted to send him to behavioral therapy now because he's been, for the last 3 months, it was like an overnight change. Suddenly he became exceedingly aggressive. His speech worsened. He's like really hitting people all the time. And when he comes to me for speech therapy, he's forever sticking out his tongue and trying to look at his tongue. And I'm like, oh my goodness. Okay, this is really urgent. Do you mind sending me just a photo of his tongue? Let me stick it out for you. When I saw that, I knew exactly what to send him to the doctor for. I said, please get him tested right now, and this is the treatment that's required. So it's those kind of things. They want to put somebody into behavioral therapy for something which is actually an illness which this kid caught, which is autistic people are susceptible to, other people as well.
Sure.
And we don't want people to be in behavioral therapy for things which are actually physical illnesses. You know, don't get somebody to act different. Another example, teenager, barely speaking. Very, very little speech, like occasional odd word. Also, some of special needs school. Whenever he came home from school, he was ripping off his clothes and walking around naked. And his mother was like, oh, you can't do this. But he would refuse to put them on. So I was in a Facebook group, and many of these things came out of hanging around Facebook groups and seeing the patterns and then trying to study what it is that the problem is, then saying like, oh, I've seen that one before. So in his case, I said, okay, do you have a state doctor? Do you have a doctor? Do you have a doctor that you can go to? Because I always want to involve the medical professionals. Mm. I mean, like, I'm not a doctor. I can't give out medical advice or anything like that. But I figured it out by asking a couple of other questions. Does he struggle with constipation? Does he have leg cramps? Does he have insomnia? Is he highly anxious? There's a couple of other things. Okay, I think I know what his problem is. This all fits the plan. I gave her some advice. And a month later, because she didn't get back to me, I said, so how's it going? Oh, no, he's keeping his clothes on now. So we know what's happening with some of those things. And these are health issues. These are not behavioral things that you need to treat. Now, some behavioral problems do come from things like abuse, and they come from being misunderstood and so on. I mean, one of the highest causes of death in autistic people, and autistic people tend to die pretty young, is suicide. And that comes from one of the contributing factors from that comes from masking, having to pretend you're normal. Now, if somebody hears me on radio, they would not guess that I'm autistic because I'm not using a typical autistic prosody. My voice, although I'm speaking really fast, so I sound like an average person. If you're looking at me now, I'm also making eye contact with my body language kind of looks normal. It doesn't always look normal. And for some people, keeping that appearance of normality, which they have to do sometimes for the sake of safety, because if they start acting like their body wants them to act, people think they're so nuts that they want to harm them and lock them up and stuff like that. So having to keep up that appearance of faking normal takes such an extreme toll on them. And what's worse as well is that some therapies really encourage that. They work with you. They drill kids, rewarding them 40 hours a week to act normal, act normal, act normal, and so on, and so that you can fit into the society. And in the end, you can't keep it up. You can't keep it up for the rest of your life. We speak about something called midlife autistic burnout or early autistic burnout. It's a burnout which comes from having sometimes health issues combined with that social pressure to fake normal. So I've got friends who look visibly very weird, and that's okay. I mean, let people look weird, except weird-looking people. It's fine.
Yeah,
I look really weird when I have a meltdown, and I look weird when I get tired as well.
Is part of the problem that there is still a mindset that says autism is a sickness that needs to be treated, rather than a broadening of the mind to say that this is somebody who responds differently to the world and processes the world neurologically in a different way than I do, and that we just need to find a way to navigate the world in slightly different ways.
It's part of it. It's not all of it. Some autistic people have genuine illnesses which affect, I mean, like certainly, let's backtrack that for one moment. That pathology paradigm, seeing every aspect of autism as a disease, that one is super problematic, because instead of then optimizing what you are, you end up trying to kill everything that you are, and you're not working with what you really are. So, you know, seeing it as a difference is very helpful, but it also helps us to unbundle some of the issues which really are health issues that need attending.
Yeah.
If everything always get lumped together under autism and we have to cure this thing called autism, it's a problem. Or if we just think that we have to accept every manifestation of something odd that an autistic person experiences, oh, it's just the autism, that's okay. It's not. I mean, if you have a kid running into the wall head first, bashing his teeth broken, you can't just say, oh, it's the autism behavioral therapy.
Yeah.
Something is wrong. We have to look at the medical causes of that, and we can actually go through a list of things that it could possibly be. One of the problems that occurs is that we have 15-minute appointments with doctors, you know, and the kind of illnesses which autistic people and their relatives suffer from can be quite complex, and they can be multisystemic, and we have to be able to embrace complexity. And if we don't do that, we're going to always be trying to fob off simple solutions like, oh, you know, they need magnesium, it's the new cure, or they need oxytocin, or they need this therapy or that. And then people become vulnerable as well. Parents become vulnerable to those fears of, oh, my child is always going to be like this, oh, I'd better grab whatever
has been offered.
People exploit that. They exploit your fears. They'll come along with the cheap or the expensive simple solution. Just trust me, I can sort it all out for you, you know. And it doesn't work like that. Sometimes things are complex, sometimes there's a simple thing, but we have to be willing to work with the ones which are complex, embrace them. And I will be talking, that's one of my topics at the seminar, embracing complexity, working with what in the medical fraternity is called Hickam's dictum. It's where you don't oversimplify everything, where you say, in fact, the Dr. Hickam, he said, the patient can have as many damn diseases as he damn well pleases. So there was an American doctor who said that, you know. So don't think it's just the autism, or oh, it's just this, or oh, it's just this deficiency or something like that.
We've got a voice note that's come in from one of our listeners, which I'd like to play for you before we run out of time. Let's take a listen to that.
I'm listening to the chat on autism and the upcoming conference stroke workshop. This has got to be the best interview ever on the Pippa Show. Thank you, Pippa. What a wonderful guest. I'm so looking forward to actually participating and attending and doing a lot of flapping. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for that message,
cool.
Tanya.
And I would have loved to know, are you autistic too? Are you a professional or whatever? But I think he's gone.
No, I think so, but okay. But fantastic. Thank you for the message. And let me give some before we run out of time, let me give some information to those listening who are sitting there going, I want to be part of this event. Mm-hmm. Tanya, it's the 7th to the 9th of September at the Devon Valley Hotel in Stellenbosch.
That's right.
I've had a few people messaging saying, is it suitable for children? Can they come, or should the parents of autistic children come?
Parents should come. If they're struggling to have a babysitter or something like that for their children, then we possibly can sort something out, but that I think that's going to be tough.
Yeah.
What I would say, though, is that come rather just the adults. It's going to be easier. But then on the Sunday, the Devon Valley Hotel always has a massive buffet lunch. It's the best buffet lunch in the absolute world. And book for your family to come to that lunch and join us when we finish at 1 o'clock, and just book directly with the hotel for that. And then we spend the afternoon together, and we'll hang out, and we'll be noisy, and we'll be quiet, and we'll be whatever we need to be. We'll walk around the gardens of the hotel and so on. So that's where I would certainly say let families come along
and then overlap at the end. That's a great idea. Now, for how do you go about booking to be part of the event?
Okay, it's very easy. You book online. It's at autisticstrategies.net. And if you go there on the homepage, there's a link to the seminar. You can read all about it. You can fill in a form there, and you'll get an email back with some invoicing details and so on, and you pay.
Okay.
The fee is it's cheaper if there's more than one of you. Your fee then will be 2,950 rand per person. If you come alone, then it's 3,250. But you can pay in two installments if you want to, because, you know, it's you know, it's the middle of August now and it's in the beginning of September, and how am I going to get that money? So, I mean, no, pay in two installments. Don't worry about your second one. You can stage that one. Pay
okay.
Half.
So autisticstrategies.net is the website you're looking for. Our guest in studio is Tanya Melnichuk, who also you have a fantastic Facebook page that I know you're one of the admins on.
Tanya, used to be.
Are you not anymore?
In 2012, I started with a bunch of friends, a group called Ask Me, I'm Autistic, yeah. And it has over 5,000 members. It's really overworked. Some of the people who staff it are disabled, and they're working from their beds, chronically ill and everything like that, and they can become really overloaded with the questions. So we've got a backlog of membership questions. I became too overloaded with that as well, so okay. I withdrew. I'm an ordinary member now. I don't go there all the time. I just couldn't cope with that many things
sure.
to do. But a lot of our learning came there from people's questions, from what people answered and said, I experienced that, this is what happened, this is what worked for me, and so on. So when you've got several thousand autistic people and several thousand parents, there are a lot of parents in that group, there are a lot of therapists, there are several doctors in there. We have WhatsApp groups as well, which have got parents and therapists and doctors in too, so that we're all learning together. We're certainly not a bunch of people who's like, all the autistics are here and we know this, and then all the professionals are there. So we've got a very strong history of collaboration. Schools that were changed because of their learning from autistic people. I mean, I can name so many of those.
Tanya, it's been an absolute pleasure having you with us again. Our very best wishes for the event next month, and I hope you get lots of interested listeners contacting you to sign up for the seminar.
Okay, thank you, Pippa.
Tanya Melnichuk. Okay.